Blog Talk Radio. That's the question I'm most afraid of. One that asks me what I'm really made of. What do I see? Much more than a reflection. Romance with sheer perfection.
I like what I see.
Virgin temptress, dream of mothers. Yes, it's me. Yes, it's me.
Hello and welcome to Storyboards on A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is brought to you by a poetry group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. And it is free to join the group. You can just stop on by and look up A Team of Voices, and Miss Deborah Lee will let you in. You can follow along on the boards and the topic boards. You could add your poems, follow along with the poems on the shows. There's a reading list, a chat board. It's very communal. I always like to say thank you to Deborah Lee for running the group and the Blog Talk page so we can geek out live. I also like to say thank you to AP Taylor, who sponsors the Blog Talk page for A Team of Voices. And tonight, I am your host, Guy. And on Storyboards, we cross various themes from cult classics, D&D, comic book havens to high fantasy and more. And we focus on characters and the storylines and the characters brought to life that we know and have come to love over the years. Tonight, we are celebrating the film Death Becomes Her, starring Bruce Willis, Meryl Streep, and Goldie Hawn. It was, I loved that film when I was young, I know. And the opening music was the film score, as well as Meryl Streep singing that wonderful song, also written by the film scorist, and produced by him. And it's Alvin Silvestri. We just had him earlier in the week, so it's pretty fun because we just did another show, I think, on Wednesday, and he was the film scores for that as well. A little bit about him. He's an American composer, conductor of film and television scores. He has been associated with director Robert Zemeckis since 1984, and that is also who directed this film. Composing music for nearly all his feature films, including Back to the Future, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, Castaway, Polar Express, and many more, not to mention the Avenger films. He is a two-time Academy Award and Golden Globe nominee, and three-time Saturn Award and two-time Primetime Emmy Award recipient. So he has quite definitely a career in the industry, and I hope you enjoyed it. We will also be closing out with a film score as well by him later this evening. And as promised, tonight we have some poetry, have some clips, as always, on storyboards. I like to have a little bit of fun, have a little bit of trivia. Let me introduce our first caller on the line. Hello, AP Taylor.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Good. It's football final day here in Australia. So
awesome.
I am.
And are you ready? Now, I am totally not a football follower, but I would like to know, are you rooting for any specific team?
No. My team didn't get through to the finals this year, Sky, but that's okay. I am very happy to be a neutral observer.
Sometimes you just got to enjoy the game, right?
Exactly. That's what it's about. And the barbecue and all the food. So we've already started to get pictures through from my friend who is preparing ridiculous quantities of food.
That sounds amazing. Sounds amazing.
It will be.
AP, did you bring me a poem?
Yes. So, no, I want to go to the bigger picture. Guy, I because the thing about this movie that I always thought was kind of funky was that this was one of those sort of first films that sort of said, look, Hollywood, you've got to get your shit together. You can't just keep going and asking women to be young and men to be old and for that to be okay. And it really sort of threw it in people's faces, I think, the way it was done. So this is a poem that I've just put up on the board. It's only short. It's called Not Bruce Willis. And it goes a little bit like this. To be in Hollywood is death with the devil, youth and seeking the student dilemma. And so the goals for the well. So why not yourself the devil and who
AP.
Cares?
AP, I hate to interrupt you, but you're cutting out, and I would hate for the listeners to not hear the whole thing.
Let me go. I know there is a problem with my particular house. If I go to the front of the house, it seems to be better. So bear with me. I'm going to now ask you, Sky, is that better than what it was?
It is better, thank you.
Okay, I'm going to almost call back in if it's that bad. But anyway, let us go back and start again. He's only brief. It's not Bruce Willis, and it goes a bit like this. To be in Hollywood is to dance with the devil, youth ever seeking with beauty the level. And so the scripts cut out roles for females, head past 40 and roles left fail. So why not sell your soul to the devil? And who cares what needed to level? He will take minds, your appearance strung. That's Hollywood. It's about the young. But if you were male, more important than news, is old men allowed? Just ask Tom Cruise. Ken Paul.
Excellent. Oh, my God, this is brilliant. And I this film does touch on so many things. When you look at the satire of it and the quirkiness of it, and you look at the truth behind why these women are clinging to their youth and wanting to be present and prevalent in Hollywood, and the truth of it is, you know, you always see those things where if you start aging out, you start getting less calls, or if you start stop looking a certain way and such things. And there is that stigma of role reversal, of gender reversal. And, I mean, you can see it in many, many, many things. And I love that you touched upon it. I like how you brought in, you know, and so the scripts cut out roles for females. How you don't shy away from it. You just go right to the root, and you go right to the gut. And then you talk about the selling the soul for the devil. Who cares? And I think, you know, on many levels, you see all of these. You see it in the marketing. I mean, even if you don't, if you're like, well, we don't know what's going behind closed doors. Well, we do, but you also see it in magazines and marketing, and. It's just there. You have to be young and beautiful, right? And who cares, you know, your soul to the devil. And I also think that line carries over to the types of things people do to keep their bodies in shape and, you know, surgeries and such things where they feel pressured to have to do this and to be able to stay prevalent. And I really loved your ending. It really, really gave me a chuckle because I just can't believe he's still making films. Like, I don't even, like, kudos to him, you know. And it's not just he's making films. He's still doing all those crazy trick shots. I mean.
Yeah. And he's got 23-year-old leading ladies, you know. It's just ridiculous, you know.
Yeah. It's just. And you know, with that too, there is that kind of unspoken, okay, you can have the older guy and the younger woman, that's normal. And then when you start switching it around, it's like a scandal, right? it's not
yeah,
as common.
It is.
So, this is brilliant. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and look, the actresses in this movie are wonderful, yeah? So, you know, you couldn't have three better actresses, you know, on the stage, I don't think, with, you know, Horn, Rossellini and Streep. They're just brilliant character actresses. But, you know, it sort of struck me that they were sort of in this movie and they desperately wanted to make the point that, wanted to make a whole heap of points, but this was one of them, that there just were so few films that they could get and put their arms around, despite the fact that they were absolutely brilliant actresses.
Absolutely. I love that you went with the bigger picture. I think that's great, and I think that it brings about great conversation to that kind of saying, well, what is the movie really saying? And I like how, you know, whenever you get a movie that's kind of quirky, kind of dark, kind of satire-y, but really has an underlying truth, I think that's what grabs the audience. I mean, plus brilliant actresses, and Bruce Willis is quite brilliant himself, too. So, I mean, that's just great. I thought it would be great for spooky season because, you know, it's like the Frankenstein of, like, a weird warp zone.
Yes.
I think, you know, Goldie Hawn even says, she's alive at one point in the film. Quite brilliant.
Really interesting. It's a dark film. It was actually hard to watch it sometimes because the effects are so gruesome, you know. It's a really interesting sort of film, and it sort of sits out there, I think, as a sort of outlier, for want of a better word, in terms of what it was trying to do and what it was trying to say.
Yeah, when all the time Meryl Streep breaks her neck, I just cringe every time. So yeah, I just it's just
horrible.
It's just cringe.
It's almost unwatchable. It's that gruesome and that real, you know. It's like, oh God, yeah, blah, blah, you know. Oh, I'm gonna turn away, you know.
Well, when they reached out to Meryl Streep about the film, she thought that they were going to offer her Goldie Hawn's role, and she thought that they were going to try to have Goldie Hawn do the act of singing and all that, and so she was quite surprised to have her do it. I'm not sure why. I think she's quite brilliant, but you know, she said that in an interview about this film. She was just like, I was surprised. I thought they were going to do the other way around, but
okay.
Yeah. A little bit of fun.
She does very well. She's actually a great singer.
Meryl Streep? Oh, yeah. I mean, I played her in the beginning. She's brilliant. I mean, I don't think there's anything she can't do, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, she's wonderful at what she does. Professional.
All right, AP, what do you have going on
What do I have
next week?
Okay, well...
Yeah.
It is tomorrow, isn't it? Wow. So it's Saturday night. It's at 10 Eastern. And that's going to be a challenge for me because the clocks are all changing here tonight. So I'm going to have to make sure I show up at the right time. We are on Don't Dream It's Over, the New Zealand band Crowded House. So anything about dreams, anything about it not being over, anything about it being over, really. There's scope.
I think that's a great topic. I think it's such a great topic. All right. I just want to let someone else in the door. Hello, Rack and Tour.
Yes.
Okay, Ryan.
Hey.
How's it going?
How you going, Rack?
How you doing, AP? I'm good. I'm good, guys.
Yeah. I'm
sorry, what'd you say?
We were on Small Poems, Rack. We were on Small Poems, but not written about Bruce Willis. So that was mine up on the board. We've sort of covered, you know, and it's not a big poem, like 69 or 70 words, you know, it's not a big poem. But it's saying something.
Brevity's become you.
I do them occasionally. And I should point out too, Sky, that I actually finished my pick that I was doing in the show the other day. So for those people who were interested, I was sitting there painting squares and triangles. And I finally managed to paint the whole board with them, which was good news. So that's now done, thank goodness, because it was driving me slightly crazy just painting squares and triangles. But I mean, I saw it through.
Awesome. Are you sticking around? Are you reading and running? What is your day look like?
I would love to, but I am getting messages on WhatsApp about what's happening with the food up 300 metres away at this football final extravaganza that I'm going to. For the record, I'm bringing a cake that I'm buying. You know, when in doubt, buy something. And that's exactly what I've done here.
That's what I would do, too.
I hope you have a
great time.
Thanks, Doug. And have fun, have a great show, and we will catch up, I'm sure, down the track.
Soon, yeah. Thank you so much for calling.
No problems at all. Okay, talk soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Rack, how are you? Bye.
I'm good. It's like Friday night, Thursday night, Saturday night.
Night, don't worry. It's not my normal Friday. I mean, I won't be on normally on Fridays. It was just empty. And And I was like, oh, I really love
I'm used to happy normal.
Yeah, I just love spooky season. AP brought a poem, and it kind of touched upon the and just to fill you in, because I thought it was really cool, and maybe you wanted to give your own thoughts. But he wrote a poem, and it said, name of it was Not Bruce Willis, and it touched upon the stigma in Hollywood, how women have to be young and beautiful and to be casted, and if they, when they kind of age out, they become not as prevalent and prominent in the business, they stop getting so many calls, and it's not so much that way. And he ended the poem with just ask Tom Cruise, because it's not so much the other way. And you know, he touched upon how Tom Cruise is still making films in with 20-year-old women instead of this woman his own age. But yeah, I thought it was really cool and really prevalent to the themes of the deeper themes of the film itself. So it was a cool poem.
Yeah, that's always an interesting thought, how some people, you know, as they get older, they become more elegant and sophisticated, and other people, it's like, you know, oh, well, why would I want to associate with you anymore? You know, you're going to be late for the early bird special, you know? It's such a double standard, it's not even funny.
Yeah, and you know, he kind of talked about selling the soul, and it kind of reminded me of the extremes people, some people go through just to be able to keep their youth a little bit longer, because they're afraid of losing their career, or they're pressured. You know, like how easy is it in the industry? Oh, go see this guy. I know a guy. And though the film is fantasy, like this is a little potion and, you know, all these things, the premise behind it is very truthful. So I love that AP touched on that. Okay, I really did.
Yeah. The picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes. And they had a bit of a Frankenstein feel in this, and that is why I mean, because they die and they come back to life, and then, and like I was telling AP at one point in the film, she goes, she lives, and just because it's really funny. I have yet to play my first clip, and I think I'm gonna do. Have you seen the film?
A long time ago. I barely remember the Goldie Hawn, but yeah, it was still memorable. I mean, it had its moments, and you know, the idea of it was kind of cool. So, yeah.
Okay. Let me give, for our listeners out there, let me give a little just in case, and I will say this is storyboards. There's always a spoiler alert because I hold nothing back. I think I only held back one time, and that was because I really didn't want to ruin something, because I knew that maybe it was Steven who was going to watch it, and I didn't want to give it away. But a little bit about a storyline. When a novelist loses her man to a movie star and former friend, she winds up in a psychiatric hospital. Years later, she returns home to confront the now married couple, looking radiant. So I don't have many beginning clips when they were kind of when the movie star meets Bruce Willis, who's playing in the surgeon, who is engaged to the novelist, who is played by Goldie Hawn, and she's like, basically every guy I go to marry, she steals away or marry, and I do have a little bit of that, but I just don't have the first meeting. You know, I didn't put that in. But I have some cool clips that I thought were cool, and I'm going to play the first one, and then Rack and Tour, we've got some fun trivia, and any time during the night, Rack, if you have something that you think is prevalent or that you want me to put up, or that comes to mind at all for you, just let me know, and I'll put that up. So, all right, so I'm going to play my first clip, and I'm going to comment on AP's poem, because I made a promise to myself to not get so knocked up with with comments. So here we go.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Helen, it was a dinner. A business dinner. The woman wanted my professional opinion.
Ernest, you don't know Madeline the way I do. She wants you. She wants you because you're mine. I've lost men to her before. She just turns on that flash and that glitter and they're gone. That's why I wanted you to meet her before we got married, because I just had to see if you could pass the Madeline Ashton test. Please, please don't fail. I couldn't take it again. I don't know what I'd do.
Do you know how silly you're sounding? I have absolutely no interest in Madeline Ashton.
Is this where we are, Helen? 6 months of therapy. You're not even 1 pound lighter, and we are still talking about Madeline Ashton?
Do you think I enjoy talking about Madeline?
Do you think I enjoy it, huh? Is that what you think? Well, you better think again. Oh, Helen, for you to have a life, oh, for any of us to have a life, you have got to forget about her. You have to erase her from your mind. You have to completely eliminate any...
What?
You have to completely eliminate...
You're right.
What?
You're absolutely right.
May I say that I've always thought yours to be one of the most beautiful faces ever to grace the silver screen. Oh, that husband of yours. I can only say that his reputation is unsurpassed.
Oh.
I just arrived in town. I followed a spring. I haven't seen an autumn or winter in years. We are creatures of the spring, you and I.
I'm not really quite sure why I
do. You're scared as hell. Of yourself. Of the body you thought you once knew.
I beg your pardon. I am the one who understands.
I am the one... knows your secret. So warm, so full of life, and already it ebbs away from you. This is life's ultimate cruelty. It offers us a taste of youth and vitality, and then makes us witness our own decay.
Well, it is the natural law.
No, screw the natural law!
What is that?
What you came for. A touch of magic. In this world obsessed with science. A tonic. A potion.
What does it do?
How old would you guess I am?
I wouldn't.
Come on, don't try to flatter me.
38. Oh, 28. 3?
23. I am 71 years old. That's what it does. It stops the aging process dead in its tracks and forces it into retreat. Drink that potion and you'll never grow even one day older. Don't drink it, and continue to watch yourself rot.
How much is it?
The sordid topic of coin. I'm afraid is not so simple. The cost, you see, it's different for everyone.
Well, for me, how much? I should be going.
Sit! Check okay?
Fine.
But you must make me a promise. The secret that we share must never become public. You may continue your career for 10 years, 10 years of perfect, unchanged beauty. But at the end of that time, before people become suspicious, you have to disappear from public view forever. You can retire, you can stage your own phony death, or, as one of my clients simply said, I want to be alone.
No! Wow. Bottoms up.
To be together a long time. Be good to it. Sempre viva. Live forever.
That sounds like an introduction to something more sinister if I've ever heard one. Treat your body well. You're going to be together for a long time. Yeah, I thought that was a fun section. And, of course, I want to live for – I mean, I want to be
– I want to be alone.
I want to be alone. Quoted, I believe, by – I think they were referring to Greta Garbo. But the funny thing is that Greta Garbo, you know, plainly stated it was – she said – well – she said, I want to be let alone. But you know what? It's what are those called? When people always think something and it's like a mass belief, like they believe something's there, but it's really not there. And it's like everybody, it's like common knowledge, but it's not really true. There's like a name for it. Oh my gosh, my friend knows. I'm going to have to ask her and get back to you on that. Because she sent me a bunch of those. Like some, if we think about our memory and say, well, look at it, a Fruit Loops box, and is there this? And then you think, yeah, I swear there is, but there's really not. There's a name for that, and I think that quote is one of those quotes. Right? If everybody else believes it, it must be true. Oh, I have a little bit of fun trivia for this film. A scene we haven't gotten to yet, but the scene with the shovel. Oh, first of all, Meryl Streep, I thought, was so funny in this. Like, she's like, now you tell me? she's just so, I just love Meryl Streep. She's just so funny. And, but she, later on in the film, her and Goldie Hawn are going at each other with some shovels, and she actually scarred Goldie Hawn's cheek with the shovel during that fight scene.
Wow.
Yeah. And this was the first film that used photorealistic human skin software. So that's right up your alley, Raconteur, 1994.
Wow. Yeah, the years that some of this stuff came out is surprising. You know, it's like, oh, they've been doing that since God knows when, and it's crazy, but, you know, it's really wild. And you know, the fact that some of it's actually based on sci-fi, you know, that there's lists of things that, like, were predicted, you know, they started out as sci-fi, and then they turned into real products and things. Like, they credit the Star Trek communicator with the advent of the flip phone.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, it seems like, I mean, people like my godchildren and things like that, and the kids in school,
mm-hmm.
you say certain things and they're like, oh, that's vintage. And I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, I know that I'm younger than you, but even I say that. Like, I'm just like, oh, my gosh. Like, someone said the other day, be kind, and then I couldn't help it because not every time, but when I hear be kind, I just can't help but think rewind. You know, so I said, be kind, rewind. No one knows I'm talking about Blockbuster. You don't even know what a Blockbuster is. And what my kid that I work with, they always say, oh yeah, I love the vintage 90s or the vintage 80s. And I'm like, oh my god. And I'm just like,
the vintage 90s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't even handle it. In a UK television interview, we'll go on with Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep was asked about this uncharacteristic role. Whew, that was a lot of R's. And she replied that it was too original to pass up. But as I said earlier, she assumed that Goldie Hawn's character Helen was meant for her, not the song and dance role of Madeline. And in the opening scene that we've opened with, Meryl Streep's character is starring in a musical version of Sweet Bird of Youth, 1962, a play by Tennessee Williams about an aging actress who pines for her lost youth. So they were very particular in that as well. And we'll give one more for now. The film won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects, defeating Batman Returns 1992 and Alien 3 1992. I thought this film was 94. Maybe it's 92. Oh, I was wrong. It's 92. Yeah, that makes more sense. So scratch my 94. It was made in 92. But, yeah.
But they still won.
That's the
important part. The takeaway is they won. They're the ones that won. So whoever they were up or against, they were defeated.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, I am going to drop another poem since we did a clip. Let's see here. Thank you, Jenny the Deep. She said she loves this movie. And I love this movie, too. I absolutely love this movie. I don't watch it too often. I did rewatch it. I know we were kind of wondering if I was going to be able to get it in, but I did. And I just realized, because I wasn't refreshing what AP was talking about. He put his painting on the board. And I didn't even say anything, but it's because I didn't know he posted it. I didn't know that's what he was trying to say. AP, if you're happening to listen to this or to listen to the playback, that's pretty cool. I didn't realize you were putting it in here. Huh. Love this guy. All right, so Jenny the Deep. I'm going to have to write him a little message. I didn't realize you put it on the board. All right, this is Never More Loveliness Toxicity by Jenny the Deep. Jealousy was her downfall, the lowest of the low, for she just couldn't let him go. Her poisonous love infected her more than him. Had a full life ahead of her, now doomed. Her light dims. Toxins flood her pores, drenching her soul. Caught him with another, her heart, it did explode. She thought their love would outlast infinity. Pushed to the edge from his lack of sensitivity. Insanity took over her bewildered head, looked them both in the eyes, and shot them dead. Blood scatters, she still is unfazed, stuck comfortably numb, she's lost in the daze. A little too late, remorse and shame kick in. What has she done? Did they really deserve it? Forget it, nothing she can do now but die alone. Left to rot in the night with nothing but her sorrow. End poem. And I know that you wrote on the topic board if, you know, you weren't sure if it's fit. I think it fits perfectly because I think it hits on so many themes, and I could tell that you've watched the film and that you enjoy it. And I can tell by this chosen piece because Goldie Hawn's character, Helen, was just so jealous. I mean, they both were jealous of each other, but she was so jealous that she wasted her life away in this attempt to get back at Meryl Streep's character because she was jealous of her and she did steal her fiance. And that kind of poison and you know, led toxin into not only her life, but it was not really about the relationship with Bruce Willis anymore. It wasn't about the doctor. It was more about her and about that jealousy. And I think that in this first and second, first stanza that you touch upon that, with her poisonous love infected her more than him, meaning she lost the subject that you're speaking of, lost sight of the person that they were supposed to be pining for because they were consumed by this vengeance and this hatred and this jealousy. And so I liked the way that you stated that. I also thought that it weighed well to it as well with how it ended up going down with this affair and, of course, the death. And I think that also lends to the theme, obviously, because they, at first, Bruce Willis' character and Goldie Hawn's character, they try to plot Meryl Streep character's death and how they were going to do it. And then come to find out she survives it, and then Meryl Streep just shoots Goldie Hawn, her character, Helen. So I think that, too, played into the same themes of your poem. You know, but the thing about the poem is even if you took the film out, and I know that this was written a while back, so it wasn't even written for this film, I think the thing is to look at is that themes are themes. Specific stories are original on their own, but when you think about love themes and heartbreak themes, there's an umbrella that if you put a subgenre in, you can say, oh, it can relate to this, it can relate to that. But the poem itself tells its own individual and different story. And I think that's the great thing about films, about books, that, you know, when you can think about, do I have a poem that relates to that? Yes, I do, because these are themes that rerun in people's lives and that people can connect to, well, maybe not this one. I hope not everybody connects to this one. This is a bit grim, but the emotions of it, of course, I think jealousy is a pretty common emotion. Is it this extreme? Probably not most of the time, but is it some of the time? Yeah, yes, more often than we think. Absolutely, And I like how you summed it up with a little too late. Like, there is no time to be, you know, once remorse kicks in, the deed is already done. And I like that you put that in the storyline, kind of looking back and saying they're just left all of this emotion, all of this plot line, and they're just left with sorrow. Everything else have been eaten up, chewed, and spit out, and there's nothing left of them but sorrow. So that was a great way to end. Great poem for tonight. And Raconteur, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about stories like this, or, you know, in general, like you're mentioning, it's all about those underlying emotions, and that's what you focus on, and why you can take something that you know, you weren't thinking about this specifically, but apply it, because, you know, that's the driving factor in a lot of things. You know, it's like the motivation, the whys, you know, when someone does, you know, the idea of, you know, well, when you love someone, you'll do anything for them, or you die for them, or this or that. Well, when you're so self-centered, you don't notice things. You know, that's the thing that kind of carries through, and it takes on many facets and umbrellas. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's the core of it, and that's what you touch on, is that idea of, you know, well, when you're dealing with something like this, you know, these are the pitfalls. This is what tends to happen, and, you know, it's kind of not a generalization, but a you know, an inevitability almost. You know, when someone does this is what's bound to happen, or this is what tends to happen when you're dealing with it. And you know, you capture that wonderfully.
Yeah, excellent. But hopefully not every person is like this.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hopefully everyone's not like Hannibal in their stalking role. Excellent. You didn't even laugh, Rack. Oh, there it is.
I am laughing.
Thank you. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, Shady the Deep, for bringing that poem and sharing the poem with us. Yeah. I'm so excited for spooky season. Can you tell?
I can't wait. Do you dress up?
We've already started. What do you mean, do I dress up? I haven't dressed up in a while. I don't really go anywhere. Did you forget who you're talking
to? The people come to you. You know, they're gonna knock on your door and trick or treat you.
Oh, I do. You're right. I do. No. I did. So I do dress up. I don't even know why I said that. I do, because I'm thinking, like, do I dress up and go to a party? No, but I've dressed up every year to take my godchildren trick or treating. But last year we did. In our town, we have a trunk or treat, and it's basically, if you don't want to take the kids all the way across the town and stuff, if you have, like, little kids, or if you just don't want to do that, or if you take them by the town, but then you want to hit, like, a lot of places at once, we do, in the middle school parking lot, you sign up, and everybody does they decorate the trunk of their car. And then they hand out candy there. And me and my godchildren's mom, we did it for the first time last year. We're going to do it again this year, too. We just decked out the back of the trunk with – she got this big blow-up spider. And it came out – the legs came out of the doors of the car. And it was so awesome. So, like, the car was the spider itself. And then in the trunk, we had, like, cobwebs and cauldrons. And I brought spooky books because I'm pretty geeky. She had her crystals because she really loves crystals and things like that. And we had a bunch of other stuff. And I dressed up as – I don't even remember what I dressed up as, actually. It was something dark. No, and then I had a mask. No, it was not Cruella de Vil. But she was a voodoo priestess, and she had this fantastic hat and just a wonderful mask And I had, I don't even know what I wore. I really don't remember. It was something, but I remember that I had to take the mask off because the kids, her costume was so fabulous, but it scared the kids a little bit. And my costume was a little bit less, was a little more low key. I really don't remember what it was I was. I'm going to have to try to remember that. But I remember halfway through the night, I had to take off the mask because all the kids know me from school. So they kept coming up, oh, you know, and saying my, you know, Miss whatever. And they were more willing to come over because this place is so scary. That was so scary. So I ended up not wearing the mask more most of the night. And I really loved the mask, but I ended up not wearing it most of the night. I'm trying to remember what I was. I forget what I was. It'll come to me. It'll come to me. But we also do a spirit week and like in school, and last year I dressed up as the Mad Hatter. Well, I wore the hat and I wore the his like the tunic and stuff like that. And then my goddaughter went as the White Rabbit, so we kind of dressed up together. And I wore my Alice in Wonderland scarf one day like we had a fandom day, and I wore my Alice in Wonderland scarf. It has the whole first chapter. It's like a wrap scarf, and it has the whole first chapter of Alice in Wonderland on it, like in text. That's cool. Anyway, but I started spooky season early. That's why we started this week. But because I'm ready. That's where that was going like an hour ago. Yeah. All right. I think so. We did a poem. We did a clip. We did a poem. I think we're ready for our next clip here. All right. Here we go.
Look at you. She's already destroyed your career. Now she's breaking your heart, stealing your pride, flaunting her lovers all over town.
You know about that?
Everyone does. At the party, people spoke of nothing else.
How can you love me, Helen? I've been so weak for so long. I should have divorced Madeline a long time ago. Oh, by God, that is exactly what I am going to do. The first thing tomorrow morning, I am going to go downtown, and I am going to obtain a divorce from Madeline Ashton.
Ernest.
Well, the first thing Monday morning,
Ernest.
Then. At the very least, Tuesday.
Ernest, divorce in California? That's exactly what she wants you to do. You have no talent for poverty. You can't let her get away with that.
And there's nothing I can do.
Oh, yes, there is. Now listen to me, Ernest. I've thought this thing through carefully, and I know it's the only way. Tonight, while she's asleep, you'll sneak downstairs quietly, go to the study, and take one of each kind of wine glass from the shelf. Then, you'll take this Narcanol and lightly coat each glass. As you know, Narcanol is a very powerful alcohol-based tranquilizer, so you won't need much. Tomorrow, I'll call Madeline to say goodbye. I'll try to get her to invite me to dinner.
Fine. Why don't you just come to dinner?
Then at dinner, we propose a toast. No matter which glass she drinks from, the Narcanol will be on the glass. Then you and I work together quickly. First, we finish dinner. Then we load her in the car, take her to the top of Mulholland Drive, call the police, and report that we've seen a drunk woman swerving dangerously close to the edge.
Some drunk woman up here on Mulholland swerving dangerously close to the edge.
We'll sit her up in the driver's seat and make it look like she's had just a little bit too much to drink.
We drop the car into gear.
Wedge her foot down on the accelerator. Clamp her hands on the steering wheel and send her on her way. By the time they perform the autopsy, the narcanol will be completely dissolved, leaving only traces of alcohol. She'll be classified as just another drunk driver. They'll check her blood alcohol.
0.40. She had it coming.
And think nothing more of it. The case is closed. Madeline is dead. And we're free.
We can't go through with this, Alan.
It's the only way, Ernest. After she's gone, you can start your life all over again. I can start my life all over again. We'll be so happy. She's killing you.
So, it would be self-defense.
Self-defense.
Suite 1110, please. Helen, it's me, Ernest Minto. I did it. I didn't think I'd be able to, but I did it. I pushed her down the stairs, and she is absolutely stone cold. And she was saying the most monstrous things, and she's dead. And I did it. I didn't think I'd be able to, but I just had this feeling inside of me that I couldn't contain. And we're free, Helen. But I'm afraid I'm going to burn in hell because her neck is broken, and there's no pulse, and she's dead.
Exactly which part of the plan were you unclear on?
Because we went over it three times, Ernest.
No, Helen, you don't understand.
Ernest, we went over it three times.
No, Helen, you don't understand. It just happened. I mean, it was an accident. It's better than an accident. At least it's going to look like an accident.
Have you called the police?
No, I called you first thing.
Ernest, you poor, sweet thing. If the police check the phone records, don't you think it'll look unusual that you called me before you called them?
Oh, my God. Right.
Of course I'm right.
Well, should I call them right now?
No. We have to decide what you're going to say first.
Well?
I'm thinking. Okay, I've got it. Where's the body?
It's at the foot of the stairs.
Foot of the stairs. Good. Don't move her. As soon as we hang up, you call the police.
Okay.
You tell them you were on the phone with me when you heard a terrible scream. Turn around and you saw Madeline fall down the stairs.
Right. Perfect.
Stick to that story, because if they check the phone records, it'll just confirm exactly what you told them.
Got it.
One thing, though. What about the time of death? Do you think they could ever use it to prove the phone call came after?
No, no. It's very difficult to determine time of death within a few hours. It's not really an exact science.
Ernest.
It's not an exact...
Ernest.
Ernest!
You pushed me down the stairs.
Stay away from me!
You bet I will, animal, psycho!
Don't come near me!
Wait! Pusher!
Don't come near me or follow me! Don't come near me or follow me or talk to me!
I don't intend to. I just have to make a telephone call. I just have to make a telephone call.
911, right? You're in the shit house now, pal.
Madeline, look at yourself.
Huh?
Look at yourself.
Ernest? My ass. I can see.
And for those of you who are not sure, it's because when she fell down the stairs, her head completely turned to the back of her, so she's her head is facing the entire back of her. Her front face is facing the back of her. It's so funny. It's just hilarious. It's so comical and just, I don't know, I just think it's so funny. I do want to say hello to my mom who's listening. I did say it was trunk or treat. I did say it was that. But hello, mom. Thank you for listening. Anybody wants to say hi to my mom? She's there.
Hi, mom.
And by the way, so the reason why I watched so many Goldie Hawn movies when I was younger, including this one, is because my mom, the one who's listening, was always a huge Goldie Hawn fan. And I can't help but watch anything of Goldie Hawn or see Goldie Hawn or even hear her name without thinking of my mom. I don't know, it's because they're both kind of quirky and funny and silly, or because she loved her so much, but, you know, that's what I think about. But what did you think, Rack? It's your kind of humor.
Well, I had visions of her head twisted around while she was giving that speech. So, yeah, I remembered that part very clearly. You know, when you talk about Goldie Hawn, for me, I'm going to age myself. I remember her from Laugh-In. So, you know, that's how long she's been on TV, on the air, on sitcoms and things before she was ever like, you know. Well, I guess she was an actress at that point too, but, you know, Laugh-In was its own thing. So it sock it to me. I'm sure your mom remembers that. She's sitting there probably giggling. It was a time, and you know, but yeah, she was always a good actress, and you know, that this is no exception. That speech, the idea that she can, like, you know, wake up from that. You know, he's a doctor. He checked that she was dead. She had no pulse. She's dead. She's dead. And then there she is yelling at him about getting pushed.
Yeah. I loved her. I think one of the first, I guess the first and most prominent films that I remember her in was Overboard. Overboard for me was with her husband, right? No, actually, they're not married.
Yeah.
They've been together for years and years and years, but they're not married. Like 40 years or something. But when I think when I think back on my first, I think Overboard and I think Private Benjamin, because those are just the first that I think about. Yeah. I don't know if you remember Private Benjamin.
Just been around, you know, it's funny when you said the first, I my mind went to Overboard and I completely forgot about Private Benjamin. And then you said, and I pictured her with the stupid pit helmet on, staring at the you know, looking up at it and you know, from underneath the helmet. The poster.
But yeah, it was a good film. I mean, she does comedy, so funny. I am going to officially check if they're married, because I'm pretty sure they are not married. So, and then we're going to go for a few. Yeah, they're not married. Despite never marrying, Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell are one of the longest standing couples in Hollywood. They have been together since 1983. So they are not married. They've been together since 1983. So what is that? 40, that's what I said, right? 40 years, about. I said 40 years on a guess, but that was a good guess. It's 40 years. So that's crazy to think about. Yeah. But I need to watch Overboard pretty soon. I haven't seen that in a while. I've never watched the The new one. They came out with the remake. I don't think I want to watch that. Like, I don't know why they're going to make a remake of that. And I'm not sure. So a little bit more trivia. Well, before I do trivia, let's go back to the costume question. Raconteur, did you ever get, was there a time in your life where you loved to get a good costume on? And if so, what was your favorite?
I dressed up quite a bit as a kid. You know, everybody did the ghost. There was one Halloween I actually cross-dressed and I went out as a woman. So, you know, I had a whole all kinds of different Halloween experiences dressing up. And then, you know, I don't know, you kind of, I won't say get bored with it, but then you kind of run out of ideas. And then you fall into, like, you know, well, if I can't be this, then I don't want to be anything. And you get ideas about, you know, oh, well, what am I going to be this year? And if you've got no place to go, it's like, you know, well, I'm too old to go trick-or-treating. So unless I got a party, I'm not going to dress up, you know. And then there's other people that want to dress up just to answer the door. So, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. But, you know, I enjoy looking at the costumes where I did. You know, I very much appreciated the all of the accessories. You know, sometimes it was just the simplest things. I saw somebody basically take a card table and cut a hole in the middle and stick their head in it, and there were a head on the table. I was like, that was a cool costume, because, you know, you could sit there and you know, if you position yourself right at the party, you know, people put their Cheetos down on the table or whatever, you got a free snack. You didn't even have to get up.
Oh my god. Awesome, thank you. So and my mom's still listening, and she said that Goldie Hawn's daughter is in Overboard too. And I actually really like her, so maybe I'll give it a try. And I feel like if Goldie Hawn's daughter is in it, then maybe it was blessed by Goldie Hawn saying, yes, you may do this. but I actually really like her as an actress, so maybe I'll give it a try. But yeah, I bet you could think of really punny costumes, like really like cheesy but funny but punny. Like, I bet you, like those ones that you're like, what? You know what I'm saying? And that's a compliment. That's a compliment if you didn't know.
Yeah, I took it as such.
All right, let's see. I've got some. All right, here we go. The film underwent some major re-editing after negative feedback at test screenings. The entire ending was changed. Tracy Ullman's role disappeared completely, even though she remained in the trailer. That's really interesting. Now I want to know, I'm going to have to look up at some point what the original ending was. And did they film, they must have filmed it because they screened it. So there's all this footage out there. I'm going to have to take a trip. I'm going to have to take a trip through YouTube at some point.
That's funny that they can't because I would have pictured Bette Midler in that part.
Well, they cut her out. So what part was it? They cut her out completely. So what was the role? Yeah. They took out her character completely. So the character isn't even in there anymore, but they left her in the trailer. I don't understand. I understand. And it is official in the trivia. It was Greta Garbo, but I already figured that out. But it was Greta Garbo that they were doing. Mm-hmm. All right, the film was originally going to be a sequel to Tales from the Crypt, 1972. The latter film was a favorite Halloween classic for director Robert Zemeckis when he was a young man. So this was supposed to be a Tales from the Crypt sequel, which is really interesting because I never knew that. And I love Tales from the Crypt. I better check my studio. Okay, here we go. Pretty Bird dropped a poem and said she might call later. I would have been if I had seen that earlier, I would have been willing to perhaps even push my show till 9. I know that she usually can't go till later, only because it's not a school night, and I can stay up later tonight, obviously. But, yeah. All right, during the description of the plot to kill Madeline, there was a quick shot of the folder being stamped case closed at a desk. Also on the desk was a brain in a glass jar labeled abnormal, a tribute to the original Frankenstein, or to the spoof Young Frankenstein, 1974. And this is why I picked this film for spooky season. I know that we haven't hit October, but I'm partying early. Obviously. I'm partying a week early with Practical Magic and Death Becomes Her. I'm getting this October spooky season on the roll.
Igor.
I know. I still haven't seen that new film with Renfield. So it's supposed to be really funny and very inappropriate. I haven't seen it yet, but I think I'm looking forward to it. This film has often been said to be like an extended episode of Tales from the Crypt, 1989, by fans of the show, especially considering that director Robert Zemeckis had produced it, which is what we kind of already went over, right? This is the second Robert Zemeckis film that won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects. The other ones are Roger Rabbit and Forrest Gump.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ready?
Let's see. Animatronic puppets of Meryl Streep's head were created to use to shoot the scene where a resurrected Madeline confronts Ernest. The effect didn't look right in the shot. Ultimately, CGI was used.
Everything's done on computers now.
I know. Well, no, not everything. The Mandalorian is still building stuff on set, which I'm so excited for them. I'm so, so excited. Because they're still making the way with puppeteering. Yeah. Puppeteering. And you know why they're still doing that?
It's cheaper.
I don't know if it's cheaper, but...
I have spoken.
Because someone has spoken, and this is the way. I was leading into that.
Yeah.
All right, we are going... We are going to play another clip, and then maybe I'll have another question by the time we get back. And I have to scroll on up because I went way out of the way trying to find I Have Spoken. I really don't think I have. I'm going to have to do the This Is the Way recording because I don't know where that is in my file. It got lost. All right, so here we go. Here is the next clip, so I hope you enjoy.
Sit still.
Don't touch me!
Oh my God, it's right.
He is not right. Don't be ridiculous. What do you mean if you were right?
You're in violation of every natural law that I know.
I violated what law?
In violation of every natural law that I know. You're sitting there, you're talking to me, but you're dead! I'm gonna get help! I need a doctor, please! I'm from 147, please! I need a doctor, please!
I'm terribly sorry, sir. I know how difficult this must be.
You don't understand. I mean, she didn't... This is very hard to explain.
I know it is. How can anyone explain it?
Where did you put my wife?
Don't worry about that now. Just give yourself some time to grieve.
Where did you put my wife?
She's dead, sir. They took her to the morgue.
The morgue? She'll be furious!
I woke up and it was all dark and I kept yelling and yelling and yelling. Nobody heard me. Nobody did anything. And then I didn't even know where it was and I got scared. Ernest, I'm in the morgue. Why am I in the morgue?
Shh, it's okay, it's okay. Listen to me. I understand now. It's incredible. It's physically impossible, but now I understand it.
They think I'm dead, Ernest.
They think you're dead, but you're not dead. In the whole of recorded medical history, this has never happened to another single human being.
Yes, so why did it have to happen to me?
Do you know what you are, darling? You're a sign. You're an omen. You're a burning bush.
I am?
Of course you are. We're being told that we belong together. I'm being called. I'm being challenged. Don't you see, Madeline? It's a miracle!
Where is she?
Oh my gosh, Helen! What are you doing here?
What's that on your hands? Blood?
Paint.
Paint? What would you be doing that you have paint on your hands?
Painting.
Ernest, are you doing something funny with Madeline?
Define funny.
Oh, come on, Ernest. Cough her up.
Shh, shh, shh.
Why are you whispering?
She's asleep. She's resting. Upstairs, she's in
a
foul mood.
Oh, please. Are you nuts?
Shh. Helen, she's resting.
She's not resting. She's dead, Ernest. Just like we wanted. Just like we plotted together, remember? You may have done it alone, but I can't walk away from this now. Not after you putting us both in jeopardy like this. We have to bury her in Death Valley and be done with her once and for
all. Helen, please, you have to listen to me.
I'm not waffling, Ernest. She deserves it. She was a homewrecker. She was a man-eater. And she was a bad actress.
Would you
please listen? Stop.
Madeline is not ready to be buried yet. Upstairs,
oh,
resting peacefully.
Oh, fine. Oh, if she's not dead, you tell her to come down here. You tell her to come down here, walk right up to me, and kiss me on the...
Kiss you on the what?
Matt?
Hell.
Darling.
What have you two been plotting down here, or should I say, what else?
Are you angry, dear? Are you very angry?
It's a lie.
Madeline? Oh, boy. Helen, I think you should leave right away. I see a very, very bad situation developing here. Dear? Madeline?
I just want you to know one thing, Hel. You brought this on yourself.
Madeline! Oh, my God! What have you done?
What have I done? Defended myself, that's what. You plotter, co-conspirator.
She's dead!
She is. These are the moments that make life worth living.
My God, Madeline, that was horrible! It was brutal. It was stupid. The police, Adam, the police.
Oh, what are they going to do? Put me in the gas chamber? Big deal.
Well, what about life in prison? You know what that means to a person in your condition?
Oh, you're so negative. Can't you for once just let me enjoy the moment?
Well, I'm a neighbor. You don't think they're that kind of guy?
Neighbors? In 12 years in Los Angeles, have you ever seen a neighbor?
Oh, I gotta think. What if that's irrational?
I am completely rational, Ernest. We're going to bury her in Death Valley, you and I.
Certainly will not.
Oh, no? Pretty strong words for a murderer on the run, which is, let's face it, exactly what you are, Ernest. What if the police should receive an anonymous phone call about you and find me on the floor, not breathing, no pulse? Ain't nobody can play dead like me, Ernest. What will you tell them? You're going to be very popular in prison.
Oh, I have a hole in my stomach. Oh, I have a hole in my stomach.
Yeah, and you're still alive.
It's another miracle.
He's just so ridiculous. I have to say, I just loved Bruce Willis's performance in this film. So brilliant. Every time he screams, like someone who's half paint, like he just like all this stuff is going on, and his wife is dead, and he's worried about her being furious. She's gonna be furious.
Are you mad, darling? Are you mad, darling?
Right now. What?
Are you mad, darling?
What?
Are you mad, darling?
Yeah. He's like, you're not that mad, are you? What the hell? He's just so ridiculous. Oh my gosh! And he's just always in a panic. He's like, where are the doctors? I don't know. He's just so funny in this film. I just really, really enjoy him in this film. Oh my goodness. Whew. Okay, I brought a poem. I just picked a poem that has the word death in it. And then we're going to play another clip, and then I'm going to read for Pretty Bird. So, because she also dropped, so we're gonna give a little space for me in between. So I'm going to read mine, and then I'm going to play another clip, and then I'm going to read Pretty Bird's. So it's going to be fun. All right, here we go. This is... Yeah. Oh, did I say a magic word?
You did.
I did. I don't know. I don't know if I have that one. Yeah, I do.
It's fun. Look at the fun we're having.
Love a little bit of Tyrion. All right. I love how you caught that. Thank you. Yes. I can't be the only one catching clips. All right, this is called A Bed of Tombstone Weeds by Sky Darko. I heard a voice, half-formed and framed in smoke gravel, an incantation of tombstone weeds closing crisp around pale wood arms. And with its solemn face of sliding windows and gathering curtains lingered a chaste scent of fear. Salted and preserved for thin bodies, those hollow cheeks that creak with atrophy when there is only horror to feast upon. Ribbons of spoiled meat, a delicate kind of calling, that soft familiar whisper in the dark. Dead things folded down in beds, sketched behind peeling paper, insects wriggling to escape. An incantation of tombstone weeds closing crisp around pale wood arms. Those swallow charms one might rather spit out than swallow. End poem.
Love a picture.
You know, I like the idea you mentioned the dead things too, because that reminds me of the line from Pet Sematary. But you know, my mind goes all over the place sometimes. You know, you start off with such beautiful imagery on such a dark subject, and I love when people contrast something like that, because you know it's not supposed to be so pretty, you know. And here you are talking about the curtains and everything, lovely and lacy and delicate, and it's like, yeah, but there's rotting flesh and maggots, so, you know. That's a hell of a picture, man. Yeah.
Thank you, Rex. You refer to sometimes dead is better. Is that where you meant?
Right.
From
Pet
Sematary. Sometimes dead is better. That's a good one. Mm. Awesome.
Well, that tends to be the case. That's a theme.
Yeah, you don't want anything coming back to life. I mean, it ain't pretty.
it always seems to be a disaster when something comes back to life. Nothing's ever been brought back to life successfully.
Well, it's so funny that you say that, because in my next clip, he says, oh no, that was in the last clip. He said, I think you better get out of here. Things don't look like they're going to be good. And then she shoots there.
A horrible situation developing.
Yeah, that was it. You're better at remembering what you said. This is what I'm saying. Like, the lines that he comes out with, he's just like, he's trying to stay calm and panicked at the same time. It's like, are you panicking or are you calm? I don't know. Yeah, brilliant. All right, so what am I doing? I am going to say a few more trivia facts, and then I'm going to play the clip, and then I will read for Pretty Bird. All right, let's see. So, of course, before I do anything else, Raconteur, do you have anything that you want to plug?
Halloween, I'm going to be doing a Monster Mash. You know, bring your favorite monster poem. You know, come dressed as your favorite fiend or villain or poltergeist. That's going to be the 31st is Halloween, so the 31st at 10 o'clock on Super Voices.
Awesome. I can't wait for that. It's going to be fun. Fun. I might as well do. I know, I just keep on saying it. I can't press it, though, because I have my clip right where I want it. I should have two tabs open is what I should do. My next show is next Tuesday. I am so excited for this one. So it's the first week of the month, so of course we have Star Wars, and it's going to be volume 25, because that's what I'm up to so far. And it's at Lego's Star Wars Terrifying Tales. It is absolutely hilarious. And Rack, this humor is like right up your alley, and you're going to love the clips. I brought all the clips, and you're just going to love them. I think the show is going to be one of your favorites. I think the humor is just, you're going to really enjoy it, I think.
That's cool.
No pressure to like it, but I think you're really going to like it.
But Pretty Bird's first show coming up, I think it's Tuesday, since you're going to be dropping her poem,
okay.
Too. So.
Oh, yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, okay, let's see. Tuesday, what's Tuesday? Let's see.
Did you put the door up yet?
Tuesday is the 3rd. Yes, so there is no topic board, but Raconteur says she's on Tuesday. And she's usually on at 10 or 11? 10?
I think we've all settled in on 10. We started off at 11 and then we're not staying up that late, so we all, you know, early bird.
Yeah. All right, so 10 o'clock. Stay tuned for further information. Yeah.
What the flock?
What the flock? Love it. I love it, love it, love it. I went off my page. Okay, so here we go. Here we go. Okay, the shots in the psychiatric clinic where Helen is brought looks exactly like those in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, 1975. And I missed this, so I'm going to have to go back and watch this, because when Ernest is running around the emergency room trying to find a doctor, which is the clip we just saw for Madeline, Kurt Russell can be seen giving an interview on a television in the waiting room. Goldie Hawn, who plays Helen, has been in a relationship with Kurt Russell since 1983, so which we already established that, but I didn't even notice Kurt Russell made a cameo. I didn't even realize that. I'm going to have to go back and look at that. Oh, man. Okay.
Milton Striggs.
Yeah. Oh, the trailer features the theme from Tales from the Crypt, 1989, by Danny Elfman. Oh, my gosh. Love it. Okay. All right. So I'm going to go and play the last clip I have. And I didn't, it's almost the last clip. It's not like, it is the last clip I have, but it isn't like the ending of the film. But I thought it was the ending of the film, that the last one that I was going to do. So this is basically, I mean, you'll see. So here we go. Enjoy. Enjoy.
Ern, darling, Helen and I want to apologize for that little thing downstairs. We've got it out of our systems now. Completely gone.
Yeah,
gone.
Thank God. It was so awful hating you and envying you at the same time.
You envied me?
Oh.
I envied you.
You did not.
I did too.
You
yes,
did?
I
well,
did.
Specifically, what part did you envy?
What a great point. For me.
Excuse me. Just wanted to tell you both that I've come to a decision that important and long overdue. I'm leaving.
You what? Leaving? No, we can't
need
leave because
you.
I promised Hal that you would fix her.
And Maddie needs work too.
You can go first.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you.
Ern, come on, what do you say?
For old time's sake. Please.
On one condition. When I'm done, I go. You don't look for me. You don't ask about me. You don't even think about me ever again.
I have no problem with that, do you?
Not anymore. It's still wet.
Oh, can Ernest fix
this? He'll go.
Get him before he leaves.
But wait a minute. What if this happens again? What if it fades? What if it chips? What if it rains? Will he come back for touch-ups?
Even if he does, he's not going to live forever.
Oh, that's not good.
What are we going to do? He'll have to take the potion.
Yeah.
We'll take him to Liesl's.
Uh-huh.
She'll talk him into it.
Uh-huh.
He's not going to go to Liesl's. You heard him. He's made up his mind about leaving.
Mm, that's true. I have to respect that. I know. We'll drug him.
Ern, darling?
My taxi here?
We thought you might like some breakfast.
You know, I was just thinking. I was questioning myself. I was wondering why I didn't pack this thing 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, instead of sticking around here and suffering every indignity and humiliation. I'll tell you why. Because I made a promise. That meant everything to me. Yes, it's all very noble to keep your word.
Ernest, your drink.
Well, do you know what they call someone who sticks by their word no matter what?
at the cost of everything else. Do you know?
No.
An idiot. But from now on, I'm going to be the kind of idiot I want to be. An idiot with a modicum of pride, because you know what? I finally realized something. I've lived up to my promise. So death do us part. Well, your girls are dead. And I'm parting. Cheers.
But don't be modest. That's what you do. This is what you've always done. Stop time in people's faces and in their hands. You are like Don Quixote, tilting at nature's windmill. Drink it. Go on. It is the completion of your life's work. You gave other people youth and wasted your own. Drink, and you'll be able to work again forever. Drink. Drink, Dr. Menville. You owe yourself another chance. Drink. It's the right choice. The only choice. Drink. Siempre viva. Live forever.
Then what?
What?
Then what happens?
What?
I don't want to live forever. I mean, it sounds good, but what am I going to do? What if I get bored?
What?
And what if I get lonely? Who am I going to hang around with, Madeline and Helen? What if something happens to me? What if I get maimed? What if I get shot? What if somebody pushes me down a... What if I fall down a flight of stairs or something?
But you never grow old.
Yes, but everybody else will. I'll have to watch everyone around me die. I don't think this is right. This is not a dream. This is a nightmare. You people all have to be stopped.
Take Tom Perry. Get the potion from him.
Well, he's not having it. What I like about that scene is that, I mean, what I'm confused about that scene, about what he brings to mind to me, is when she puts the potion on the cut on the cut heals, and then the finger goes back to its youth. But the wounds that they inflict after they have it don't heal. So it's a little contradictory, and I didn't notice it until that scene that he's, like, yelling. Were you going to say cool something, Rex?
No, it was a cool movie.
All right. So just for the FYI, he does not take it. He chooses to fall to his death, but he, spoiler alert, he does not actually die. But then the two of them, the two woman characters, have to deal with each other for the rest of eternity, which is their own form of punishment, I guess, right? Okay, this is... So Pretty Bird has a poem titled Death Becomes Her, which I think is brilliant, because that fits. My world, it fits, because that's how I roll. So this is Death Becomes Her by Pretty Bird. Even the exceptional seems tedious, smoldered in a desperation, fed by waiting when nothing ever comes, feigning emotion, gliding through life a ghost, in distant reflection of a light that burned out eons ago. You loved me, perhaps you still do, trampled by the wild horses you once overcame with vigor. Everything must die, or morph into mundane shadows. Suffocation is time tortured in elongated seconds. Rip off the band-aid already. For my love never wanes. Watching yours fade just proves the lie of souls. Faded in another life, perhaps, where fear didn't rule iron-fisted, beating hope into submission for fun. How can anyone trust a path of lies veiled in dreams, siphoned by a master who hides beneath his kindness, beaten unrecognizable by trust, blinded and skinned alive in revelation, lost in the flip side of perfection, I still believe exists. Or at least existed. Spit shined beautiful, glided and resplendent, gilded and resplendent, perhaps I was in awe of possibilities. Improbable as they were, impossible as they seemed, those possibilities fueled my desire to believe happiness was attainable once upon a time. End poem. I love this one. I read it. This is my first time reading it. Well, I pre-read it, but it's my first time reading it. And I love that you brought this one because I haven't read it before. I feel like I've read a lot of your work. I don't know if I've read most of your work, but I know I've read a lot. And it's just, it's stunning. The way that you used language in this, that kind of built off of the words kind of built off of each other for example, when you say improbable as they were, impossible as they seemed, those possibilities fueled by desire to believe happiness was unattainable. The way that that flows out of your mouth when you're saying it, it's just a very particular set of words that even the sound of it out loud is delightful. Like it just sounds beautiful. And then you put the context into it and it's just heartbreaking. And you have this beautiful flow of language. And then when you're reading it, you get in, you know, you start the message and the storyline and the emotion of it starts to sink in and you're just lost in it. A lot of parts there were so many parts that stuck out to me, but the feigning emotion, gliding through life, a ghost, all those times when people are like, it makes me think of just those times when we are outside of ourselves and we're placed somewhere else and dealing with other things, and yet we still have to go through the motions of every day. Like, we just can't stop that. And sometimes we do, I guess, for bouts and we hibernate or we go through what we need to go through alone, but eventually we do have to interact, and it's almost like someone they're not there because they're somewhere else. And then this one, a distant reflection of lights that burned out eons ago. That was so gorgeous, the way that you wrote that, and heartbreaking in itself too. Like, this is how distant that's the distance it seems, how far away it was, that light. And I know that I didn't read this how you but would have read it, and it's so like weird because I can hear you read it. You know, but I just can't mimic it. Like in the stanza, you love me, you loved me. Perhaps you still do. I just hear that when you say you loved me, perhaps you still do. I just hear the way that you read, and I like that too. And the wild horses I thought was brilliant. Who was it? The wild horses.
Rolling Stones.
I mean, I know the Sunday Dream, huh? Yeah, the
Stones.
Rolling Stones, and then the Sundays redid it, and I love both versions. And it's, I don't know, it's just that just brought into mind that thing. But this is another one too with the language, the way that you kind of mimicked the words that you were saying, or morph into mundane shadows. I just love that one. All right, Rack, you better cut me off because I'm going to start repeating every single stanza. This was wonderful, Pretty Bird.
Yeah,
I could. Well, because I'm trying to pick out my favorite part, and then I realize it just keeps going. So, all right, one more part. Yeah, one more part. It's just, the part that speaks about a path of lies veiled in dreams, siphoned by a master who hides beneath his kindness. And I think that's like the worst kind. Those are the worst kinds of villains, the kinds that, you know, sell you candy that's poisoned, that all those sweets that are filled with sour and toxins, and just that smile on their face with things wriggling in their teeth, right? It's just, I mean, it's awful. And these are the types of, yeah, I mean, this is just brilliant. And then the end line where you thought something was one way, you thought it was a happily ever after, you thought it was a fairy tale, and then comes to find out you've completely been blindsided by what you thought, you know, and I think on some level, all of us can relate to that. All of us have been lied to at one point or another. And this was just wonderfully, wonderfully written. Raconteur, your thoughts.
You know, like you were saying, it's one of those things where you start to say, you know, this is my favorite part, and then next thing you know, you quoted the whole thing. In other words, you loved it. And you know, that's just the way, you know, Pretty Bird tends to touch me when I read her words like that. And especially knowing her relationship with the truth. There is black and white. There's no gray. You know, this, you know, you lied. If you lied, you lied. And the idea about, you know, the emotions and that being sold, that bill of goods, and why, you know, it's a theme for con artists and things like that. It's almost like they have a school that this is how they teach you how to be successful at it, and this is what works, and they base it on the truth or half truths, and you know, and there's the smile and the I keep going back to the stupid theme from the X-Files of all things, that line, I want to believe, and that's what they play off of. They know that even if they lie to you, it's like, but you want to believe the lie, so they don't even have to try, and then when they get caught, or you know, if you know, if you're intuitive or you're in tune with the, you know, the metaphysical type things, you know, you kind of know, and it makes it that much worse. And you know, that ties into the emotions of it and everything too. There's a lot of, you know, when you talk about bleeding on the page, you know, this is what we mean, or what I mean when I say it. Anyway, this is kind of what I mirror a little bit too when I try and get feelings down. You know, it's very you know, honest and you know, well this is what I thought, but you know, it turns out I was wrong, and that's kind of what makes it sadder still. Because, you know, it's not just the situation, it's that you committed to it. You're like, you know, let me give it a chance, let me see, and the next thing you know, you get hit, you get swamped, and then it makes it feel that much worse. Yeah. Beautiful piece.
Excellent. I could not agree more. Thank you so much, Pretty Bird, for submitting it. It's a little bit of pressure reading for you. I love to read you. So I always love to read you. All right, so someone's a little late to the party. Hi, Hatter.
Hi, guys, can't say.
Hatter,
a little late, huh?
I'm so glad you stopped by, Hatter, but we have 5 minutes left.
I'm so sorry. My neighbor graduated.
No,
today. I was invited to a party.
You're what?
I was invited to a party.
You were totally fine. Oh, okay. Well, I hope you had fun. And you are totally welcome to drop a poem and to share, to read us out for the night. I just want to let you know that we do only have 5 minutes, so I'll try to be quick. I don't know if I have it in me to make a quick comment, but...
I would like to read the one that I'd like to read the one that I wrote the other night again, if I could.
All right, knock yourself out.
Because I reread it.
Throw it right up there.
It was pretty good. I'll get it. I'll post it.
All right. Just post it right on the board because I'm about to delete my topic.
You got it. And then I'm in the building. Okay. Come on. There you go.
All right. Yeah. We're ready.
Maybe I should have mentioned the world I did not save. I just happened to be there digging my one and only grave. Maybe I should have been clear about what I do. The last thing I wanted was to offend you, too. Did you hear I stopped the warming, our planet as safe as can be? So I cut down all the forests and don't leave any one single tree. Was it you that I told or how I can't grow old and time is an old friend of mine? Maybe it's the stage where I turn the page and find the grand design. Maybe I should have carried that secret that you told me. You can trust me with anything. Your secrets are safe with me. Did you know I was a poet, a wordsmith by trade? I write in riddles so you might find the words I cannot say.
Mm. And that's a little bit like your lyrics as well, the song.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is like a part two.
Yeah.
I love the repeat of maybe I should have mentioned, maybe I should have been clearer. Maybe it's the stage where I turn the page. Maybe I should have carried. And then also the way that you paired those repeating lines, and I say repeating because they're half repeated, but change. You know, did you hear I stopped the warming? Did you know I was a poet? So you kind of pair those with these other repeating lines, and I love the flow of that. I thought that was really well done. And I liked how you go, you know, I just happened to be there digging my one and only grave. And you start off with, you know, kind of like digging your own grave, obviously. And then this kind of of apology, and it's kind of vague. So I think when someone's reading it, they can connect to it with perhaps they meant this or perhaps they meant that, or they can implement their own, like their own emotion or their own circumstance through it, in the beginning at least, and then you start getting into a little larger picture of the world and into the poet and how we all
dig our own graves.
At least I know I do. Well, not so much that, because he comes out of that, but he comes into this bigger idea of how I think I can relate this to a lot of things we don't say to even in day-to-day to other people, we say in our poetry, and those are the things we can't say or cannot say, but we end up doing our writing, and I know that I very much do that, so I think that also it's something that many people connect to. Very well done. I appreciate you bringing it again so I could hear you read it out loud. It wasn't my bookmarks from Monday. Arafin Tour, what do you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. Just that opening line of talking about digging your own grave opens up a whole can of worms. And then, you know, you go down with the contradictory statements about, you know, that evokes thoughts of like, you know, well, you know, I get blamed for everything, you know, that this was my fault. Did you know that I did this, that, and the other thing? And you're mentioning some fantastical things, but, you know, somehow you managed to be involved in them and blamed for them anyways. So and then when you tie that to the thought of digging your own grave, it's like, you know, well, maybe you should have mentioned it, could have mentioned it, or, you know, I led you to believe something that wasn't true. There's so many ways to interpret it. It leaves a gaping wound. And by the time you get to the end, the last two lines, the one before the last one, where you say when you talk about the secrets, that could be taken so many ways. You know, it's like, did you keep the secret, or maybe you should have kept the secret, you know? And then, you know, again, you revisit the words you cannot say, and you manage to reinvoke that thought from the song about, you know, that there's all kinds of things that you're interpreting that I wasn't able to say out loud. And I'm hoping that, you know, if you know me well enough, you can interpret it. But, you know, that's usually not the case. And sometimes it turns into a crutch. And people want to say, well, you know, you know me better than that, you know. Well, I didn't say it to hurt you. But you said it, but you did, but you know me. And it turns into an excuse almost. So there's a very, very deep depth to this, and it's very layered in that, and you know, tons of emotions flying all over the place just because of the way that you opened and closed it. So brilliantly done.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I really liked how the second one came out. Maybe I should have been clear on what I do. The last thing I wanted was to offend you too. I mean, I've offended before on something that I do. So.
Right.
Mm. And you're right. Did you know I was a poet? A woodsmith by trade. Yeah, I'm sort of proud of this one. Thank you for letting me.
That's a good feeling. It's a good feeling to have to write something. And I often find when I write poems that are meaningful to me and I feel like I've gotten out what I wanted to say, I feel pretty proud of those. Yeah. Well, thank you, Hatter. AP already plugged Saturday. We are off the air now because we went over it a little bit. I thank you, Hatter, for calling in. And I always say better late than never. So I'm so glad that you never feel worried to drop in even at the last minute, because I love hearing your voice and your poetry. So definitely appreciated. I do want to thank Raconteur, AP, Jenny the Deep, and of course Hatter and Pretty Bird for all bringing poetry, for sharing the night with me and having fun with the film Death Becomes Her. Kicking it off here with Spooky, we are closing with the theme song, so stick around for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sky.
Here we go.
See you, Rack.
Take care.
Awesome. Absolutely brilliant. And
Who was that?
It was Alan Silvestri. He did the film score, and that's what we did. So we did the film score. I talked a little bit about it in the beginning. He does a lot. I absolutely love him. right, so I do have an after show clip. It's very short. I don't know. I'm just picking this one. It's from Game of Thrones. I haven't played it in a while. But also, I thought, like, there was a little bit of, like, love and obsession here. So I thought it kind of fit. It's only 15 seconds. So I hope you enjoy.
My feather bed is deep and soft, and there I'll lay you down. I'll dress you all in yellow silk, and on your head a crown. For you shall be my lady love, and I shall be your lord. And I'll always keep you safe and warm, and guard you with my sword.
That's it. Just a nice little, just a little after show clip.
Have you ever heard, Patty's Late for Work?
No, but I'll look it up.
Look it
if
up.
You want me to.
Yeah, look it up. Patty's
right.
In for Work.
And it's the Irish Patty, P-A-D-D-Y?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funnier now. Really good.
I will definitely look it up. Maybe I'll have it for you next time, Hatter. So
cool.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks. Okay. Sky.
It's a nice party.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude.